You come with the dead who people my dreams. By Tigress Wolf. Read by Tiny Pink Mouse. You come with the dead who people my dreams. Chapter 1. A headhunter confronts Neil as he walks to an all-night deli for a late supper. He usually eats with Peter and Elizabeth, but tonight they had a date. So Neil sent him off with unsolicited advice and laughter. The headhunter is good, very good, and Neil hasn't used a blade in a little over a century. He doesn't even carry one anymore, since he works in close quarters with the FBI and, even for him, a sword would be hard to explain. Neil feels the buzz of someone else before the headhunter does. And Moz turns the corner at a dead run, gun in hand. You can't interfere, the headhunter shouts. But Moz ignores him and shoots him in the heart. You want him? Neil asks, lifting the sword. Moz shakes his head. So Neil quickly swings. Once he's recovered enough, Moz helps him home. Neil has pretended to be an infant for several hundred years. Moz thinks he's actually slightly older than Neil. So he takes charge and tells Neil that he'll deal with everything involved with the dead body. Neil's glad to leave him to it. The next morning, Neil goes to work like nothing happened. He smiles at everyone, teases Peter about the date, and solves 3 cold cases about his own alleged work. The quickening settled easily, shoved down with his teacher, and half a millennia as first a slave, then a monster. No guilt, of course. He stopped feeling guilt around Christianity's birth. But then, at lunch, another headhunter attacks. Peter shoots him and hustles Neil away. A few hours later, it's reported that the body is missing. That night, Neil slips his guards, since it was clear that the man was after Neil and no one else, and takes his second head in 48 hours. This time, the quickening doesn't settle so easily. Nor the next. By the weekend, he's killed 3 more and he knows it's time to go. He spends the night with Peter and Elizabeth, laughing and soaking up their simple devotion. He could imagine falling in love with them both. Already is a little in love. The next morning, Neil tells Peter that he has an errand and he'll see them later. He doesn't. Moz has more recent connections, a better grasp of the world now. He helps Neil vanish. Neil goes in the middle of the day, with only the clothes on his back and an untraceable phone, which he uses to call a number only a handful of people in the world have, and leaves a desperate message. I need your help, he says. Please, uncle. An hour later, he receives a very brief text, an address. A minute later, 2 words. Hey, kid. Relief fills him. Mythos will take over. We'll find out why he's being hunted. All Neil has to do now is survive. Chapter 2. His uncle is waiting at the safe house, sprawled over the couch and holding a beer. Didn't expect to see you so soon, he says, collapsing next to Mythos and gesturing for the alcohol. It's passed over with little fanfare, and Neil drains it down. No, he's not Neil anymore. Can't be. Time for a new name, a new life. Without Peter, without El. Maybe with Moz. Sometime in the future. We owe a young man named Moz a favor, he tells Mythos. But of course, Mythos says, we'll worry about that later. You need a good rest. He closes his eyes, tries to sink into the couch. Mythos rests a hand on the back of his neck. I'm here, he murmurs, voice deep and soft. The same voice he'd used to coax trust from wild horses. The same voice he'd used to give a nameless, three immortal boy to Kronos, 3,500 years ago. Neil, Mythos whispers. Neil Adamson, my younger brother. Sounds nice, Neil slurs, and lets himself slump against Matthew, an older brother he's always wanted. Chapter 3. Elliot is walking home from the gym, planning what he'll cook Hardison and Parker for dinner, when the bus hits. He doesn't react, just keeps walking with only a quarter of his attention. He focuses his senses outward and can separate two separate buzzes. One he recognizes, one he doesn't. Mythos. No. Recently Adam Pearson, but not anymore. Matthew Adamson, as of 2 weeks ago. But what is he doing here? They haven't spoken in 700 years. Not since Elliot. Then Hector. Helped him with security for Silas's haven. Elliot had considered hunting him down when he learned of Silas's death, since only Mythos could have killed him. But after a few days' thought, he decided that while might may not make right, Silas was a big boy. Old, strong, and would have chosen Mythos's hand to kill him anyway. Plus, Elliot was busy with a goddamn monkey. Matthew Adamson steps in Elliot's way, a shorter, prettier shadow behind him. Elliot Spencer, Matthew says. This is my younger brother, Neil. Elliot looks the kid over, and Neil meets his eyes straight on. Younger than Mythos, certainly, but older than Elliot by at least a millennium. Matthew, Elliot replies, politely nodding at Neil. Been a while. Just wanted to let you know we're in town, Matthew tells him. Be here about a week, most likely, then we'll move on. Thanks for the heads up, Elliot says. We should meet for drinks. Catch up. Sounds good, Matthew steps closer, lightly grips Elliot's shoulder. Day after tomorrow, then. We'll meet you at that bar you frequent, around 6. Fine, Elliot says shortly. Ready to be done. Parker's probably already at his place. If Hardison gets there before Elliot's present to supervise, he shudders to think what'll happen to his apartment. Matthew backs off, meeting Neil's eyes for a moment. Neil nods and turns, sauntering along the street. He was Cronus's favorite, Matthew says in the language Elliot had first known, nearly 2,000 years ago. Had a bit of a mishap recently. Found himself lost without a clue. Mythos speaks through, staring at Elliot with an ancient, dangerous gaze. Someone has been hunting him, Yehudi, and we've yet to discover who or why. I'll keep an eye out, old man, Elliot promises. Matthew smiles, says, we'll see you soon, and follows Neil down the street. Elliot walks back to his apartment, chases Parker out of the kitchen, fusses at Hardison for doing something to his laptop, and throws together the best meal they've had since the last time he cooked for them. He'll worry about his uncle and cousin tomorrow. Chapter 4. In Jensen's dreams, Max screams and whimpers and dies in increasingly grotesque and painful ways. Sometimes, he still wishes Caspian were alive, just so he could hand Max over to his teacher and tormentor, and watch the master work. Clay's been ranting for 3 hours. Jensen quit listening 2 hours and 59 minutes ago. Asia's the only one arguing with him, Guga's napping behind his hat, and Pooch is mentally composing an email to Jolene. When the buzz hits, only habit that became instinct 3,000 years ago keeps him from jerking upright. Death, Caspian's brother, goddamn fucking Mythos is at the edge of Jensen's range. Jensen hasn't spoken to him in centuries, since that thing in London at the turn of the century. And he can't think of a single reason Mythos would hunt him up now. He sits up and says, well, All right, we're done now, Yaklai. I just remembered a thing I gotta do. Computer business, you know how it is. He grins and waves and rushes out, gone before even Cougar can rise to his feet. He does go upstairs, but only to sneak onto the roof, and then he hops to the next, and by the time they realize he's not in the house, he'll be with Mythos. Mythos, who he hasn't spoken to since they saved each other's lives. Mythos, who killed the rest of the horsemen over a decade ago. Mythos, who gave him to Caspian after he decided Jensen bored him that very first, horrible, endless night. Mythos, who's been hanging out with Duncan MacLeod lately, pretending to be an infant and fucking with the Watchers. Hello, Ariston, Mythos says, offering a hand. Jensen doesn't shake. What do you want, old man? Jensen demands, arms wrapped around himself. I'm good with a computer, Mythos says, letting his hand fall. Probably one of the best, in fact, but you're better. And I'll owe you a favor if you do something for me. Jensen looks at him. Mythos waits. Will death owe me a favor? Jensen asks, in a language he hasn't used since he finally left Caspian. Or just whoever you are this week. Ned stares at him for a moment, before Matthew Adamson looks back at him. Death will, Mythos promises. Jensen smiles, clapping his hands together. Well then, he announces. Take me to lunch tomorrow, and we'll talk about it. I gotta get back. He doesn't want to turn his back on Mythos. Instead, he takes the scenic route to their safe house, where he keeps Mythos in sight until he turns behind a gas station, and then he sprints. Pointless, of course, if Mythos wanted him dead, but it makes him feel better. Caspian had respected Kronos, had mocked Silas, and pretended that he wasn't afraid of Mythos. The boy Jensen had once been and never asked why, just took the knowledge to heart. Clay fusses when Jensen gets back, and Jensen makes up a story about needing a Twix to keep his genius juices flowing. He'll make up something else tomorrow, because now that he's done being terrified, he's curious. He spends the rest of the night retracing every step Adam Pearson made in the Watcher database, trying to figure out what Mythos might need. By the time he falls into bed and wraps himself around Cougar, he's still at a loss. He focuses on Cougar, and his scent and his warm skin, and tries not to remember the years he spent with Caspian, how much he learned from Caspian, how much he liked it, even when, especially when, it hurt. Sleep, Cougar murmurs, calloused hands gentle as he strokes Jensen's spine. When he sleeps, he dreams about Max in Death's clutches, and he wakes up smiling. Chapter 5. The kid sleeps curled up next to Mythos most nights. He forgave Mythos a long time ago, and there is no one else in the world who was there. Cassandra only remembers the bad times. But Neil. Neil fully embraced everything that came after the slavery. He was Kronos's pet, Kronos's right hand, but only because Mythos gave the boy Neil once was to him. He isn't sure why he did that now. It's been so long he can't remember. Cassandra only remembers the monster Death was. Neil remembers the man. And Mythos remembers wide blue eyes and a laugh that spiraled and grew. And damn, but the kid had such a way with the knife. He got over his fear quickly and asked questions. And he learned everything Mythos thought. And then Kronos wanted him. And Mythos, he still loved Kronos then. Still thought the sun rose and set on Kronos. So he gave the boy to his brother and tried to forget how he'd tasted. And now they're the only ones left. Caspian, Silas, Kronos. Mythos knew them the longest, and Neil spent 500 years at their feet and gasping beneath them, and now he sleeps in Mythos's arms. He'll find whoever took a hit out on Neil, whoever keeps sending headhunters after him, and he'll find out why, after that. His phone chirps at him, and he reaches over Neil to grab it. The kid now known as Jensen, Caspian's favorite student, and the only one to survive all of Caspian's rages, has found something. Death grins. Chapter 6. Mose has heard of Mythos, of course. Most immortals think he's a myth. A fairy tale like unicorns and dragons. Mose isn't sure what to believe, but he knows that Neil thinks Mythos is real. Neil, he misses that kid. Mose watches over the Burks until they both die. Suit on the job, misses Suit in an accident. And then he moves on from New York. Goes to a Tibetan monastery and takes a breather. Tries to find his peaceful center again. It's been a couple of years when he feels the buzz. He resolves not to panic, but it gets closer. And then he can pick out two separate ones, and maybe they're here for sanctuary too. But what if they're not? Mozzie, a voice cuts into his thoughts, a voice he knows. Neil, he asks, standing, and yes, it's Neil. Someone's with him, slightly taller but slouching, dark hair, pale skin. Hey, Moz, Neil says. This is my brother, Matt. His brother, Matt, another immortal, the one he ran to. And the Neil smiling at him is not the scared kid who fled headhunters 3 decades ago. You conned me, Moz says. Very well, might I add. Neil ducks his head, still smiling. And now brother Matt grins, proud as an older brother should be. In my defense, Neil says, when I met you, I'd been running the corn for over 400 years. He shrugs. It was the best way to stay safe. Pretend to be harmless. Pretend to be young. That's what I do, Moz says. How I've gone unnoticed. He studies Neil for a moment, looks at the beautiful smile and the brilliant eyes. How did I not know? Matt steps forward, so Moz focuses on him. His buzz is muted. He feels young, younger than Neil. My brother, Matt says, and his accent is impeccable. As common and unnoticeable as Neil's. Learn from the best, Marco. Moz stares up at him, at his smirk, and those dark eyes that shift shade as he watches. This man is old, he knows it in his bones. Old, and knows Moz's name. Who he was before he died 5 centuries ago. Taught Neil a flawless con, and dealt with a pack of headhunters. The muted buzz intensifies, for a moment exploding out with enough power to knock Moz off his feet. Sprawled on the floor, blinking spots out of his eyes, Moz says, Mythos. Neil helps him up, and Mythos, a legend, a nightmare, someone Neil told him more than once was fact, tells him, The kid and I owe you a favor, Marco. The kid, Mythos calls him, but Neil must be old. You still looking for quiet? Neil asks. Moz shakes his head. We're going to run a corn on the Watchers. Mythos says. Watchers, Moz scoffs. Bunch of peeping toms. Neil chuckles, then continues. The plan was, I'm Adam Pearson's teacher. Adam was a watcher himself, then taken under Duncan MacLeod's wing, till they had a falling out. The watchers know me as Nate Colston, and I'm fairly low-key. Neil grins at Moz. But if you join us, we can both be your students. I'll still be slightly older, of course, to keep eyes off Matt. Moz looks at Neil, then Mythos. Their grins are identical. Why not, he says. It won't be boring. No, Neil says, while Mythos smirks. I can promise it will not be boring.